lost in a space warp. Emmanuel Rubin, as far as it lay within him to do so, looked apprehensive. He fingered his straggly beard and glanced at his watch. It was well after 7 in the evening, and his guest had not yet arrived. The other Black Widowers had all assembled for their monthly banquet at the Milano. Even Thomas Trumbull, the cryptologist, had scowled his way to the head of the stairs that led to the widower's private dining room and helped himself gratefully to the drink that Henry, that peerless waiter, had kept ready for him. Geoffrey Avalon, the patent attorney, looked down at Reuben from his lordly 6 feet 2 inches, so that they were always the long and short of the club when they stood together, and said, "I take it, Manny, that you made certain your guest knew where and when we were meeting, and that dinner always begins precisely at 7:30. "Absolutely," said Reuben explosively. "He got the usual card, giving him the full details." "I need not tell you," said Avalon, "that our postal service is not always to be relied on."
"Which is why I confirmed everything by phone yesterday," said Reuben. "I should," he added reflectively, "have called for him and brought him here bodily, but he said he had an afternoon date and would arrive on his own."
Mario Gonzalo drifted over, thumbs under his maroon velvet lapels, and whispered, "Trouble, Manny?"
"As you see, Mario," said Avalon, "Manny's guest is late."
"So he's late. Maybe he's always late. With some people, it's a habit. Look at Tom Trumbull."
"I'd rather not, ordinarily," said Reuben. "And I can't tell you if my guest is always late. I don't know him that well."
"Then why did you invite him?" asked Gonzalo.
"Because he's a promising young writer."
"Oh, Lord," said Trumbull from some distance away. "Another mystery-writing wacko."
"Not mysteries," said Reuben indignantly. "He does science fiction, and does it very well, or so Asimov says. He recommended him as someone we would enjoy, though I admit I'm dubious about Asimov's taste in these matters."
Gonzalo said, "You mean Isaac Asimov, the well-known science fiction writer?"
"I mean Isaac Asimov, the much-talked-of science fiction writer. He does the talking himself, of course."
Avalon smiled.
"Why don't you ever bring him as a guest, Manny?"
Reuben's eyes opened wide and glared through the thick lenses of his spectacles.
"Are you mad? There isn't a person here who could endure him for 5 minutes. Insufferable, conceited."
"Talking about yourself again, Manny," said Roger Halstead, who joined the group. Reuben swelled visibly, but at that moment there was the sound of footsteps on the stairs, and as a head rose into view, Reuben's expression lightened.
"Ah," he said, "Gary, I'd almost given up on you."
Reuben's guest made his full appearance. He looked young and was rather slight in build, with a prominent chin and a lowering glance. He was carrying an umbrella that looked large, cheap, and insubstantial. Reuben took him around with delighted relief. "This is Gary Nemeson," and the young man shook hands one by one as each Black Widower was introduced. "Geoffrey Avalon, Mario Gonzalo, Thomas Trumbull, James Drake, Roger Halstead." "First names all around," Reuben added, almost jovially. Avalon said,
"Is it raining, Gary?"
He stumbled slightly over the first name, since formality was mother's milk to him.
"No," said Nemerson brusquely. "It's been threatening all day, but it hasn't rained. I should think it would have after I lost my umbrella, or mislaid it, or something."
Drake cleared his throat. "If you'll look at your fist, Gary, you'll find your umbrella." Nemerson stared down at the umbrella and shook it aggrievedly.
"This isn't it. I just bought it as an emergency measure on my way here."
And he placed it in the umbrella stand where several other Black Widower umbrellas of varying vintage were standing. Henry said,
"May I serve you something to drink, sir?"
Nemerson looked at Henry absently.
"A little white wine."
He hadn't yet finished it when Henry announced that dinner was being served. Gonzalo managed to find a seat next to Nemerson.
"Do you know Isaac Asimov?" he asked.
"Certainly," said Nemerson. "He's a big name in our field."
"What kind of guy is he? Manny considers him a monster of vanity and arrogance."
Nemerson relaxed into a smile.
"He always says things like that. Actually, Reuben and Asimov are good friends. They'd give each other anything they have except a good word. The trouble with Asimov is he's passé."
"Passé?"
"Absolutely. He still writes the same stuff he wrote 40 years ago. He doesn't know any better. It keeps him popular with the younger readers, and I suppose that's all he cares about.
Drake said, I read science fiction now and then, and I consider Asimov a fair writer, though not as good as Clark, of course. But I'll tell you what I find a bit annoying about science fiction. He coughed at this point, looked at his half-finished cigarette, muttered, I've got to cut down on these, and stubbed it out. What I don't like is the anti-scientific conventions it makes use of.
Niemerson said coldly, What anti-scientific conventions are you talking about?
Drake shrugged, reached for another cigarette, and stopped himself.
Time travel, faster-than-light velocities, anti-gravity, telepathy, and so on. Those things are included routinely in 4/5 of the stories that are written, and all are impossible. How many science fictional characters have slipped through a space warp, for instance, and found themselves in a different universe? Quite impossible.
Niemerson said, The skill of the science fiction writer lies in making all these impossibilities seem plausible. He deals, after all, with the consequences of technological change, the human consequences, not with the change itself. Who cares if a particular change isn't likely if the consequences are interesting?
Besides, put in Halstead, every form of literature has its conventions. In the mystery field, how likely is it that an amateur sleuth will bump into a mysterious murder wherever he goes? Or that a private eye can consume a gallon of scotch every day and be knocked out by a blow on the head every other day without pickling his liver and scrambling his brain?
Trumbull added acidly, And romance writers find all the heroes handsome and all the heroines beautiful, and no one ever has a wart or burps at an embarrassing moment.
Avalon said, Conventions are the behavioral shortcuts of a culture.
Niemerson said, And what makes a space warp so impossible anyway? I could swear I've just experienced one.
But Reuben was trumpeting over his shrimp scampi.
What makes all you non-writer types such experts on literature? Why don't you wait for the grilling and talk to Niemerson instead of to each other? I've given up expecting you to listen to me.
By the time the coffee was served and Henry had placed the brandy bottles on the sideboard, the Black Widowers were in their customary state of benign repletion, and even Reuben was almost benevolent as he rattled his spoon against the water glass and said, Roger, will you do the honors and grill our guest?
Wait, I want to ask a question, said Mario.
Later, thundered Reuben. Go ahead, Roger.
Very well, said Halstead in his quiet voice, as he licked the last of his coupe au marron off his spoon. How do you justify your existence, Gary?
By being a science fiction writer, said Niemerson with a snap.
You consider that important, do you?
Yes, I do, said Niemerson, offering no details.
Halstead asked for none. He said, And how long have you been writing science fiction?
I made my first sale 5 years ago.
A novel?
No, my first novel is now in press, and I've got a contract for a second one. Till now, my appearances have been in the magazines.
Do they pay much?
No, but I get along.
Again, there were no details, and Halstead asked for none.
Are you married, Gary?
No. An internal struggle seemed to twist Niemerson's facial expression. Then he said, I've been contemplating it.
When?
When my novel is published and does reasonably well. Then I can justify the economic risk of marriage, I think.
You think?
Well, it's a serious step.
How long have you known the young lady?
3 years.
I take it you love her?
Why else would I be contemplating marriage?
I ask because you seemed uncertain about the matter.
Niemerson nodded. Right now I am uncertain. I'm annoyed with her at the moment.
Why?
I mistrust her sense of humor.
Mario Gonzalo brought his fist down on the table, and his expression was dark.
I'm tired of this soap opera that Roger is running. I have a question, and I'm going to ask it. You said you just experienced a space warp, Gary. When and how did you experience it?
Niemerson looked honestly surprised.
A space warp?
There was a general stir about the table.
Avalon said, What's this about a space warp, Mario? What are you talking about?
Gonzalo said, Gary said it when the rest of you were blatting your heads off. But I'm next to him, and I heard him. He said he experienced a space warp, or thought he did. I heard him say that.
Niemerson's face cleared up.
Yes, I did, come to think of it. And that's exactly what I'm talking about right now, about mistrusting Marilyn's sense of humor. Marilyn is my fiancé.
What's she got to do with a space warp? Demanded Gonzalo.
Niemerson said, space warp was just an expression because Mr. Drake, Jim, brought it up. Actually, I was thinking about my umbrella, the one I lost.
He made a wild, outward gesture.
The hell with it. I don't want to talk about my umbrella. Ask me about science fiction.
No, said Gonzalo. You don't set the rules on questions, Gary. We do, and you have to answer. That's the condition of the dinner. Manny, you're the host, and he's your guest. Tell him.
Reuben pursed his lips, then said, It goes against the grain to have to agree with Mario, but I'm afraid he's right, Gary. If he wants to hear about the umbrella, you'll have to tell him about it.
The space warp, said Gonzalo. That's what I'm after.
As a matter of fact, said Trumbull, his forehead corrugating, I'm rather interested in hearing about this combination of umbrella and space warp myself.
Niemerson sighed. It's something that's of interest only to me, really. I have, or had, an umbrella. It was a folding umbrella that was so small it could fit comfortably in my overcoat pocket, but open to a considerable spread and could withstand a brisk wind. It was an ideal umbrella. I'd owned it for years, and now I've lost it. I doubt that I'll ever be able to replace it with one as satisfactory, and I'm very upset about it.
Avalon said, I imagine everyone here has lost various umbrellas in his life. You go out with one and take a taxi. By the time you get to where you're going, the sun is coming out from behind the clouds, so you forget you have an umbrella, and you leave it behind in the taxi.
Or, Drake said, you put it in an umbrella stand, and the rain starts coming down hard, and some idiot who didn't bring one of his own calmly appropriates yours.
That's not how it happened, said Niemerson. I didn't leave it in a taxi, and I didn't have it stolen out of an umbrella stand. Nothing like that. I lost it in Marilyn's apartment.
Your fiancé's apartment?
Yes.
Gonzalo said in annoyance, Where's the space warp? I want to hear about that. Tell the whole story, Gary.
Niemerson frowned. What's to tell? You're making an epic out of a cameo. But all right, here's the way it goes. Marilyn was having a day off. She works as an administrator at a hospital, and I thought I'd drop over to her apartment in the afternoon and spend some quiet time with her before coming to this appointment. I suppose you don't expect me to give you the details of the conversation or of anything else we did.
No, no, said Reuben. It's understood. We don't try to break down the walls of decent privacy. Stick to the umbrella.
Well, as you know, it's been threatening rain all day, so I took my umbrella. Ordinarily, I'd put it in the pocket of my overcoat or raincoat and then forget about it till it actually rained. If it didn't rain, it would stay in the pocket safely. However, it's been a steamy, sticky day, and wearing a coat of any kind, even a thin raincoat, would be ridiculous, so I carried the umbrella in my hand.
Where else would you carry it? Asked Drake mildly.
Niemerson said, Listen, when I say I carried it in my hand, I mean I held it there and never let it go. I'm always conscious of the risk of loss, of anything, not just my umbrella. I'm always fanning my pockets to make sure my wallet and keys are in place.
I do, too, broke in Reuben. When you live in New York...
So I hold on to my umbrella. I don't put it down in a taxi or a bus. Marilyn hates the fuss I make over it. Actually, she hates my being systematic and orderly, and says I miss the joy of life by not being more easygoing.
And does that bother you? Asked Halstead.
Absolutely. I'm a writer, and I intend to set the world on fire. I'm serious and compulsive about my work, and I don't believe you can divide yourself into antagonistic pieces. If I'm going to hard drive my writing and do it with order and method, I've got to do it in all aspects of my life.
Reuben said, You won't be as prolific as Asimov, whatever you do, and he's an extrovert of the extroverts. You should see him when any female approaches within half a mile of him.
I don't intend to model myself on Asimov, said Niemerson. He may be prolific, and he's been helpful to me, but I recognize him as a trivial man, and I intend to be an important one. Anyway, I arrived at Marilyn's place this afternoon holding my umbrella. It was still in its folded state, bone dry since it hadn't rained. Since I had no pocket to slip it into, I put it on her kitchen table. It's porcelain-topped and would in no way be damaged by the umbrella. What's more, the umbrella was black, so it stood out unmistakably. When I left, I'd passed the table on the way to the door and couldn't miss it. Marilyn made her usual dumb cracks about it. She prides herself on having a sense of humor and claims I don't have one.
But my writing is well known for its sardonic aspects, so I pay no attention to what she says, in that respect at least. And as a matter of fact, we had a pleasant afternoon, making allowance for her penchant for inappropriate remarks of the kind she calls humorous. She's highly intelligent, interesting, and a warm and affectionate person.
Trumbull broke in. But what does she see in you, then? I mean, you're the kind of intense, driving person she wouldn't be able to endure.
Niemerson eyed him hostily and said, I'd like to think I have some good points that she values. Anyway, eventually it was time to leave. Manny had made it plain I was expected to be on time, and I intended to be. There was the umbrella on the kitchen table right where I'd put it, and I was about to leave when Marilyn suggested I help myself to a nice cold beer before going out into the steam. I looked at my watch and decided I had time for one beer if I didn't waste time over it. It was a nice thought, but it disrupted my attention to my umbrella. After the beer, Marilyn walked me to the elevator just 10 yards down the corridor. We kissed, and I turned away, but even before the elevator arrived, I turned back to her and said, I forgot my umbrella. I guess I looked perturbed, because she said, Well, don't throw a fit. No one's stolen it. Back we went to her apartment. I knew quite well I'd left it on the kitchen table. I'd seen it there when I stopped for the beer, and I could have sworn I'd picked it up. But I must have been mistaken. I certainly didn't have it with me. But it wasn't on the kitchen table, either. That was a terrible blow. I'd seen it there not 10 minutes earlier. The breath just went out of me. Marilyn said, It must be somewhere. I said, I put it right here. She said, I know, but you must have picked it up and put it somewhere else without thinking. That seemed possible, so we went over her apartment. It isn't a large one. She has a living room with an alcove serving as a bedroom, plus a bathroom, a small kitchen near the front door, and 2 sizable closets. It's all simply furnished, and there aren't many places where the umbrella wouldn't have stood out easily. And I looked everywhere. I even moved the couch to look behind it and under it, moved all the cushions on the couch and the 2 chairs, looked on all the shelves of both closets, moving things to make sure it hadn't fallen behind. I went through the bathroom and the kitchen, poked into all the corners. I spent 30 minutes on it, which made me late here, and I tell you frankly, I was in such a rage I almost didn't come at all. The point is, it was nowhere, absolutely nowhere, yet I'd seen it on the kitchen table not long before I left. Marilyn was no help. She's the one who said, finally, I guess it must have dropped through one of those space warps you write about. She may have thought that was funny, but I didn't think so. Anyway, I bought a cheap umbrella at the corner store, got a taxi, and here I am. And that's the story of my umbrella and the space warp. There was a short pause after Niemerson had done speaking, and then Trumbull said, I would suggest an easy solution. You left the apartment with the umbrella and dropped it in the corridor on your way to the elevator. You didn't notice, and someone came along, spied a poor orphan umbrella, and adopted it out of the kindness of his heart. No, said Niemerson savagely. In the first place, I didn't drop any umbrella, and if I had, it would have made a noise. In the second, I said there was only a 10-yard stretch between Marilyn's apartment door and the elevator bank. It's a straight 10-yard stretch, and there was no one else in the corridor when we went to the elevator or when we returned. We would, without fail, have seen anyone who passed. And if you think that I would be so lost in a passionate kiss at the elevator that I'd remain unaware of someone's approach, think again. Quite the reverse. I don't intend to be caught in such an interlude, and I keep my eyes open. And on the way back to the apartment, I scanned the corridor floor, and there was nothing there. A black folding umbrella would have stood out. The corridor's well lit, the carpeting is pale blue, and there are no crannies into which it could have rolled, even if it could roll, which it couldn't. You know, said Avalon, attempting to make his baritone voice soothing, all of us have undoubtedly lost items in our own offices that seem to have dropped through a space warp. I once had a thin pamphlet I used regularly for the reference information it contained. I was using it once on my desk when it disappeared. I ransacked my office, as you ransacked your fiancé's apartment before I, too, had to give up. And then one day, 2 years afterward, I pulled a reference book from the shelf, one that I rarely used. It fell open, and there, nestled among its pages, was my long-lost pamphlet. I'd mindlessly used it as a bookmark in the reference book, and when I cleared the reference book off my desk and put it in its place on the shelf, I unwittingly carried off the pamphlet with it. If I'd never used the reference book again, I'd never have found the pamphlet, and its disappearance would have remained a mystery to this day. Niemerson said, Fine, But my umbrella wasn't a small piece of cardboard that could find its way into all sorts of random places. It was a compact black cylinder, 10 inches long or so, and about 2 inches thick. You know what I think? I think it was something Marilyn arranged.
How? Asked Gonzalo.
How do I know how? She gave it to a neighbor to hold for her, or she threw it out the window. What's the difference, how? The point is that if she did this as her idea of something funny, then I won't take it. And I won't take her if that's her idea of a joke. Life with her would be unbearable if I had to watch out forever for this sort of thing.
Halstead said, Aren't you being a bit unreasonable, Gary? You say yourself you saw the umbrella on the kitchen table not 10 minutes before you left. What could she have done in those last 10 minutes? Dash to the window? Run out the door to a neighbor's? Surely you'd have noticed any such thing if it had happened.
Neimerson was silent. Drake said, Roger's making a good point, Gary. Did you notice your fiancé doing anything unusual in the 10 minutes between your last seeing the umbrella and your leaving the apartment?
No, said Neimerson reluctantly. I didn't.
But that doesn't mean she didn't do something. I wasn't watching her lynx-eyed. She might have done something none of us has thought of. She must have done something. Unless there really is such a thing as a space warp.
Henry cleared his throat.
Mr. Neimerson, may I have your permission to ask you a few questions?
Neimerson's face lifted in clear antagonism, and Reuben said hastily,
It's all right, Gary. Henry is a member of the Black Widowers.
The waiter? Said Neimerson, astonished.
An esteemed member, said Reuben firmly.
If that's the case, said Neimerson, go ahead and ask, waiter.
Henry said, Thank you, sir. My first question is this. Is your fiancée eating out tonight?
Neimerson looked confused.
Eating out?
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure. No, of course I'm sure. She was complaining about my going out. You see, I couldn't have brought her with me, as I most certainly would have tried to do ordinarily, because Manny told me this was a strictly stag organization.
There was a general murmur of assent from the Black Widowers.
Well, that didn't make me exactly popular with Marilyn. She claimed that if I weren't a male chauvinist pig, I wouldn't accept an invitation to a stag dinner. Naturally, I didn't see that. Come to think of it, I wonder if that's why she played the trick on me. Ha! With that kind of desire for petty revenge, the marriage would never work.
Henry said, I beg your pardon, Mr. Neimerson, but it has by no means been established that your fiancée was responsible for the disappearance of the umbrella.
Neimerson said, I'm sure she was.
Henry said, With all due respect, that is a conclusion based on emotion and not on logic. But I am asking if she was going out to dinner.
Well, she complained that while I was dining out sumptuously, she would have to pig out, her phrase, not mine, on a tuna fish salad. I imagine she was just saying that to make me feel guilty.
Are you saying that she may simply have pretended she would have a tuna fish salad in order to play the martyr, but that she would actually dine out?
No, I don't think so, said Neimerson thoughtfully. She doesn't like dining out alone. She's not that much of a feminist. I'm sure she would be eating at home.
Then she would be home right now?
I'm sure of it.
Henry said, I have another question. Does she know where you've gone for dinner?
Of course. I told you. I told her I was dining with the Black Widowers. And I told her what little I knew of the club, what Manny had told me.
Yes, but did she know to which restaurant you were coming? Did you tell her you were dining at the Milano?
Neimerson reflected.
No, I didn't mention that. I guess I didn't want her coming to the restaurant, finding an adjoining table and making faces at us. I didn't know we'd have a private room.
Then if she wanted to call you right now, there would be no way she could, is that right?
I suppose that's right. But why should she want to call me?
Henry said, It is my feeling, sir, that after you left, she found the umbrella and would certainly have called you at once with the news had she known where to call.
Neimerson pressed his lips together, then said unforgivingly, If she were to say she found it, it would be because she knew all along what she had done with it.
I don't believe that is the case, sir. I believe I know where the umbrella is and how it got there. I have written down one word on this piece of folded notepaper, which I will ask Mr. Reuben to hold for me. If you will be so kind as to phone your fiancée, and if she tells you she has found it, and if the manner of her finding it matches the word I have written down, then she is quite innocent of your suspicions, and the matter explains itself.
Neimerson stared at Henry, then said, I don't know what this mumbo-jumbo is all about, but I'll call Marilyn.
He rose and went to the wall phone.
I suppose I may use this? Yes, sir, said Henry. Dial 9 first. With a look of settled dissatisfaction on his face, Nemerson dialed, waited a moment, then said, Marilyn, this is...
What?
You did? Where?
But how...
Never mind, dear. As soon as I'm through here, I'll come over. He hung up the receiver and turned to Reuben. Let me see that piece of paper, Manny. Reuben looked at Henry, who nodded. Reuben handed Nemerson the folded paper. Nemerson opened it, stared at it for a long moment, then fumbled his way to a chair and sat down. All right, Henry, he said. How did you know?
You told us yourself, Mr. Nemerson. You said you were on the point of leaving your fiancée's apartment, at which time you said you saw the umbrella on the kitchen table. Your orderly way of handling the umbrella meant to me that you must have picked it up and held it in your hand as you were accustomed to doing. In fact, you said yourself that you were under the impression that you had picked it up. You said you could have sworn to it. Your fiancée then suggested you help yourself to a cold beer, and you were willing. On a steamy day like today, the beer could only have been in the refrigerator. You opened the refrigerator door, and, I imagine, found the beer cans a trifle awkwardly placed. You therefore put down your umbrella on one of the refrigerator shelves while you reached for the beer. Forgetting the umbrella, you closed the refrigerator door and drank your beer. In your later search for the umbrella, you never thought to look inside the refrigerator for it. It is simply not a place one would normally think to look for an umbrella. However, when your fiancée set about preparing a tuna fish salad for herself, she had to obtain the ingredients from the refrigerator. When she opened the refrigerator door, she must have been astonished to see the umbrella there, but she had no way of reaching you. Nemerson held up the folded piece of paper dreamily. The word Henry wrote was refrigerator.
Gonzalo said, Absolutely great, Henry.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalo, said Henry.
Nemerson said, Now why didn't I think of it?
Henry said, As I said, a refrigerator isn't a natural place for an umbrella, sir.
But you reasoned it out, Henry.
Yes, sir, said Henry. But I did it in the cool, unimpassioned aftermath of the event. Had I been caught up in the immediate, unexplained loss, I too would have been tempted to wonder about the possible existence of a space warp.